Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. A little bouncy. I'm in kind of a bouncy room. I just got to Oklahoma City. Don't know what to make of it yet. I don't know. I just have no sense of Oklahoma City. I can't say that driving in made me go like, wow, I got to live here. That hasn't happened yet. But that generally does happen these days when I travel. I get to a small city and I think like, I got to live here. I did have a little of that in Tulsa. Have not had it here yet. You're going to be listening to this the day after the show. We'll assume it went well. Tonight I'll be in Dallas, Texas at the Majestic Theater. Tomorrow I'll be in San Antonio at the Tobin Center. And on Saturday I'll be in Houston at the Cullen Theater. I just want to get that out of the way. There's a little run we're doing. Me and Bites are knocking out Texas and Oklahoma City. That's what's happening. That's where we're at. Today on the show, I talked to Chris Redd. Now, this is before we talked before he got punched in the face with the brass knuckles in front of the Comedy Cellar. He's recovering from that, it seems. And this is an interview before that. So there'll be no talk of that. And I did ask him why he left SNL, which was, he was a cast member for many years. And he's got an HBO special called Why Am I Like This? And that's out now. So that's why I talked to him. And I've known him, you know, for a few years, seen him around, just never happened. Today is the day. So look, I've gotten into a situation. It's not important. I'll walk you through it. So the other night, I had a spot at Largo. I was doing Judd Apatow's show. It's a benefit for charity. It was me and Melissa Villasenor and Dana Carvey. I also had to do the Comedy Store at 8:30. And these are spots that I accepted, you know, that I wanted to do. Not really thinking ahead because I don't know how to do that, it seems, that I had to get a 5 a.m. car in the morning to go to the airport to fly to Oklahoma City. But that's not really the problem. The issue was there's a place, it's called Craig's Restaurant. You know, I know the guy, Craig. I've met him before. I don't eat there a lot, but it's kind of like it's kind of like the neighborhood restaurant for the neighborhood of Hollywood in the celebrity sense, in a way. It's just, it's kind of a watering hole. It's like the old Dantana's. It's like, it's just the kind of go-to restaurant over there near Beverly Hills. Now, I've been there a couple times. I've been there to eat with Jeff Ross a couple times. I've been there to eat with Judd a couple of times. Like I said, I've met the maitre d' over there, and I've met Craig himself, had many conversations with him. I went to Mike Binder's birthday party at Craig's, but I still don't know whether or not I can get a table at Craig's. Now, the thing is like, look, this is not, it's not a real problem, but it just was, I wanted to eat there. I wanted to take Kit to Craig's. She had never been there. She had heard about it. She's doing a job now where it's good for her to know about new restaurants. So I wanted to eat at Craig's, but I decided to do that at like 4:30 on the night that I wanted to eat there. It was also the night that I had to do the two spots and I had to go do Judd show. So I wanted to eat at Craig's, but here's what usually happens when I want to eat at Craig's. Because I don't make a reservation, I generally will text Jeff Ross. So I'll text Jeff Ross And I'll say, here, I've got the text chains on this. All right. I said, how's it going, man? I want to go to Craig's at 7. Who should I call? Just me and the chick. I put my name in. So what happens is I say, how's it going, man? I want to go to Craig's at 7. Who should I call? Just me and the chick. Now, I don't hear back from him. Right. So I'm starting to squirm. And I'm like, well, fuck, I guess I'm just going to have to go the regular way. Right. I'm just going to have to call and see if my name lands at all. This is I'm really not a celebrity. I don't have a big name and I don't go out to eat much. See, most of it, I think, is really just about being a regular to place. But I cook my own food all the time. So I don't go out to eat much, but I wanted to go. And it was my assumption that these people, the couple of people that I know, have pull, have sway, have juice. So what I do is I basically make Jeff Ross my assistant in this situation, and he doesn't get back to me. So I call Craig's and I put my name in. All right. Here's how that goes. So I call and a woman answers and I go, do you have any tables? It didn't go like that. I said, hi, it's Mark Maron calling. Do you have any tables at 7 o'clock tonight for 2? Mark Maron. So I dropped the Mark Maron and nothing. I get zero, nothing. Now, look, this isn't even, it's not necessarily even a high-end restaurant. It's just a place to eat, but it's the place to eat for certain people. And I guess I'm not one of those people. That's what I'm assuming. So she goes, well, I can put you on a waiting list. And I'm like, okay, how do you spell the last name? And it's just sort of like, all right, why don't you just say that I don't matter. Right. Again, this is a luxury problem. But now, because Jeff's not really getting back to me, I got to pull Apatow into this. So I go, hey, man, can you help me get into Craig's at 7? I wanted to go there before the show with the girl. I just don't have a contact. The guy knows me. I gave them my name. Fuck it. We'll see. So that happened. Like, neither Jeff nor him get back to me. So I tell him that I gave them my name. Fuck it. We'll see. So now, on the other front, Jeff Ross sends me a phone number. He sends me a guy named Nick, who's the maitre d'. So now I'm going to text Nick. This is how this is going. So I've got Apatow engaged. I've got Jeff Ross engaged. I've called Craig's. And now I'm gonna text Nick, who I'm pretty sure I've met a couple of times, right? So I said, hey, Nick, it's Mark Maron. I've met you before with Jeff Ross and Judd. Jeff gave me your number, was trying to get in to eat at 7 before I do Judd's show at Largo. Is that possible? Just me and my girl. Thanks. Sorry to bother. I go back to Judd because Judd hasn't gotten back to me at all. So I said, Ross gave me Nick's number. I'm good. We'll see. And then I wrote, good talk. And he hadn't talked to me at all. And then like a little while later, he texts me, sorry, I missed your request. I'm sure I would have gotten you a better seat than Ross. And I said, no one has gotten me anything. Just texted Nick. But yeah, probably. I'm not cool enough to get into that place. And I said, have to do the store at 8:30. Then I'll come to Largo. And then he says, sounds good. Do you want me to contact Craig's? And I said, I just texted Nick, dropped your name and Ross. I don't know what else I can do. I just want a table for 2 at 7. And I assume they are hiding one that only special people can have. They are, right? I mean, Craig knows me. I just don't go there much. And then Judd texts back. I assume they will come through, but maybe you should call the restaurant and let them know you are texting with Nick. And I said, I already put my name on a waiting list. I should call back and tell them. And then that Judd just, he bails. He says, my assistant is calling you to help. And I said, I feel like a real jamoke calling me. Oh boy. Okay. Thanks. I can just wait to see if Nick gets back too. So ridiculous. Thanks. And then I said, I have a lot of good people working on this now. And he said, it takes a village. So now Judd's assistant's involved. Hi, Mark. This is Cassidy, Judd's assistant. Let me know if you need any help getting Craig's reservation tonight. The assistant network is strong at getting reservations. And I said, cool, thanks. Sure, I put my name on some kind of waiting list there. I also texted Nick because Jeff Ross gave me his number. I think he's the maitre d'. I'm just trying to get a table for 2 at 7. Feels like if you call too, I will have to put all the power of the comedy industry in Hollywood behind this request. I imagine I can just wait to hear back from Nick, or maybe you can just seal the deal with your magic. And she said, just called. You're allegedly now at the top of the waiting list. I'll keep working on it if you don't get a call soon. And I said, ha ha, sweet, thanks. So Nick gets back to me at some point. He said, I'll see what I can do, sir. I said, thanks, pal. I have a lot of great people working on this. Hope we can make it happen. Sorry to be a nuisance. And he said, come on in at 6:45 to 7. We got you, sir. I'm in. That's what it takes. Like, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed by the whole situation. But, you know, now I have Nick's number. And, you know, and again, I get there. And, like, I've met Craig many times. And he sat at the table. We talked a bit. It was so interesting because I'm sitting there. We're eating. I had Cioppino. She had some pasta. I had some meatballs. It was beautiful. The meal was beautiful. You know, I saw, you know, there were some people there of celebrity status. That's not why I wanted to go. I wanted to go because I wanted to feel part of my community. So I guess it is why I wanted to go. I guess it is. But it was weird because every time I go there, for some reason, I think of Saget. Because I eat there with, you know, Judd, and I eat there with Jeff Ross, and I eat there with Saget once. And I was like, I miss Bob Saget out of nowhere. And then, like, after we ate, Craig said that Kelly Saget was there, his wife. And I was like, oh. And we walked out back, and I said hi to her. And it was, you know, kind of sweet. It just, look, it's a neighborhood place, and the neighborhood is show business. And it was nice to go out to eat, but it took me a lot of support and a lot of help to feel like I was able to just go eat there. And but I feel like maybe I can eat there a little easier this time. I might not have to drag Judd Apatow or Jeff Ross into the situation and ask them to do my bidding to get me a table at a restaurant. Fucking ridiculous. Ridiculous. But that all happened. So I did that. I had a great show at Largo. It was just a complete riff fest. Kind of weird, kind of dark, impulsive. Car came at 5:30, which I was pushing it. 7:10 flight. And for some reason, I missed, you know, like I got someone watching the house, but you know, I missed the cats. It's weird, but I do. You know, because, you know, Charlie's only going to be young once, right? He's so fucking crazy, that cat. Charlie Beans Roscoe, the new kitten. It's fucking nuts. Like a real monster. It's weird about kittens. Like that's prime time cat experience. That's what you want, man. You want a kitten. It's fun. It's insane. But, you know, it's double-edged. Because when you got a kitten, no matter how cute, you know, you're going to be saying this a lot. Ow, fuck. God damn it. And then like 2 minutes later, you'd be like, God damn it. Ow. Fuck, Charlie. But that's fun. That's the fun part. That's the fun part about kittening. You never know how they're going to turn out. Enjoy that kitten. I guess it's the same with humans. But, you know, it's just, yeah. Charlie's good. Sammy's good. They're all good. But Charlie, this is a crazy kitten. And the other two don't even know what the fuck to do with them. Ow. Anyway. It's ending, folks. It's all fucking over. It's coming down hard. You know what I'm talking about. Get ready for it. Get ready for all of it. None of it good. Did I do all the ads? Is it time to talk to Chris Redd? Is it time? So, again, his special, HBO, Chris Redd, Why Am I Like This?, now streaming on HBO Max. And again, this was recorded prior to the incident last week where he got assaulted outside the Comedy Cellar in New York. So there will be no chatting about dadding. Dig it? All right, this is me and Chris Redd. Well, I got a guy over there. That's how I'm hooked up, man. I got a guy at Katz's.
My boy got a meat guy.
I got a meat guy. I do have a meat guy. You gotta have a guy for things.
Yeah. You gotta have a guy for a little bit of everything, man.
Yeah. You know, and as you get older, you gotta collect those guys. I tend to do a lot of things myself, but you get a little money and then you start like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, bro. That transition from making enough money to delegate.
To having a guy?
Yeah. Because I was like, when do you start having a guy clean your house? Like, right. When you start having cleaners.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, and it was just like, I was on the road so much and working so much that I was just never home. I was only home in filth. And I'm like, yo, I think now's the time I get the guy. Now,
you're like, hey, this place looks the same as I left it, and that food's still out.
Yeah. I bought all these groceries, and they're all terrible now.
Yeah. No, I don't. It's a weird adjustment to make when you go through a life where you manage your own shit, and then one day you realize, like, what do other people do?
Yeah.
And also, what am I saving my money for? Because I don't spend money. Do you?
Oh, I spend money, man. I spend money, man. I'm now in the place of my life where I'm starting to be responsible.
Yeah.
But I was just broke for so long that when I started making money, I had to like relive all the young money dreams I had.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was standing on couches and clubs, all the shit. Yeah, but like I was older though. So I was like 33.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, it was cool, but it doesn't feel the same. I'm not in my 20s and I don't know half these people. And I got too many bottles.
Right.
I can't drink all this damn liquor. The fuck am I doing?
It's kind of a sad moment, isn't it?
It's a very sad realization. I'm sitting on the couch like, yeah. And I'm like, oh man, whose couch is this? You see, you know, I'm an adult. I'm thinking about adult shit. This couch costs money. I just took dog shit before I came in here.
I know, I've had those moments where it's sort of like, I'm going to go do it. I'm going to spend the big money. And and you're just sitting there disappointed.
Yeah, you're just disappointed as hell. Like, hey, man.
How come this doesn't feel better?
My homie, Sam J, she said, you know what? It got to a point where you just have to come to terms with some dreams you just missed out on, my nigga.
Right.
Like, you just missed it.
Or maybe they're just not like, you know, they don't feel as good as you think they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you think that's the answer. You think that's the way to live. And then you get there and you're like, nah, it's not me.
Bro, nothing taught me how superficial I was as a kid as trying to do those things as an adult and being like, what the fuck were you fighting for?
I know. Well, you talk about that in your special. It's kind of interesting that, like, there's a couple of interesting sort of, the idea of dreams.
Yeah.
You know, having dreams and, you know, having kid dreams are one thing, you know what I mean? But like, you know, in the special, you talk about basketball, but then as you get older, your dreams shift, but neither one of them are that practical or that.
They're all like hard to reach.
Where'd you grow up?
I was born in St. Louis and we kind of spent like half our time in St. Louis, half a time in Mississippi, and then I moved to Chicago when I was 7, and then we moved to the suburbs of Chicago, Naperville and Aurora.
So you have family in St. Louis and Mississippi?
St. Louis, Chicago, Mississippi, L.A. We have over like 300 people in my family.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
because we like to fuck.
A lot of people. There's like, who's got all the brothers and sisters in your family? Parents.
My brother and my
your parents.
My mom has 14 siblings.
What?
Yeah. My grandma had 15 kids, bro. And her, she was having one more kid, and she had my aunties, the triplets.
Oh my god.
Yeah, crazy. Could you imagine going in the store for one thing, and getting three of them motherfuckers?
Oh my god. So that's a lot of cousins.
Yeah, a lot of cousins, a lot of people just around, and I love it. So I'm used to growing up with chaos.
But most of the childhood was in Chicago?
Yeah, most of the childhood was in Chicago, and we kept our roots in Mississippi, so we would go there all of the time.
But like, I'm trying to figure out when I first started seeing you around, like, because it wasn't stand-up, was it, initially?
Yeah, I started...
I remember you were stand-up, but did you start in stand-up?
Yeah, I started stand-up and improv.
Oh.
And in Chicago, around the time where that was a sin to do both... Yep.
So my attitude is.
I saw the face.
Are you a real stand up comedian?
Yeah. Because I heard you like to do organic openings with your bitch ass.
Like, I didn't really see you around the stand up clubs.
I remember seeing you whoosh as a tree. But I think I first. Oh, we first saw each other. Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
When Kevin Nealon used to do that show where he would like have people come up.
Oh yeah,
and talk shit, or do a set, and then like sit there and talk shit for a little while.
Right, I kind of remember that. Yeah, everybody had these big ideas about show, and we were both on it.
Yeah, I think I did one show with you. I mean, I did a couple shows with you, but I think we really like crossed paths. It was either at that show or it was at Comedy Store. Like I had to tell you at the Comedy Store.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, Chris Red's everywhere. The talk about Chris Red.
That's what I like to do. Not that I have it, but I like to look at my hustle like herpes.
Yeah.
I like to go to a city and spread facts.
Was there another guy that had Red in his name?
Nah, nigga. He gone, Mark.
not anymore.
Not anymore, man. Took care of that guy.
I thought there was another Red. Something Red.
Oh, Jasper Red.
What happened to that guy?
Jasper's funny.
Oh, he is funny.
He's a funny dude.
I haven't seen him in a while.
Sorry, Jasper. No. I've been waiting to run into Jasper, though, man. All I know is Jasper Red and Michael Red. He used to play for the Bucks.
Oh, no, he's not. I don't know that guy. So how many siblings do you have?
I have my younger brother and my older sister.
Three of you.
But then I was kicked out when I was younger, so I used to live with my friends, and so I just kind of considered them brothers too.
So you're in the suburbs of Chicago. In the special you talk about that world, the hood and the suburbs. Yeah. That's funny. But I mean, because I watched the whole thing. I'm only bringing it up because I watched it.
Man, if
I didn't watch it, I wouldn't bring it up.
Right.
I would just be like, so tell me about the special.
Right, yeah. So what's the special about?
Yeah.
What is it like?
When's that coming out? I hear it's good. But what? Why'd you get kicked out of your house?
Well, because I went to a really racist school. It was a race kind of
was
a racist
it called that?
Area. Yeah, it's called racist school. they were very upfront, It was really my fault I was there. You know, it was like a what you wearing situation. But
this is in the suburbs of Chicago. Yeah,
and like at the time, I wasn't communicating that well with my parents because they were very much like, we not friends. I'm your parent. We don't talk. And then
how old are you at this time?
I'm like, it's like 13.
Yeah.
13 on. And so I was kind of like a quiet kid until I got to middle school and high school.
And then
I started to just kind of have beef with kids and like they would be calling me out my name. And I had like.
White kids?
Yeah. And I had like, I had ADHD and my anxiety. I had a lot of anger issues because I didn't understand any of that stuff. So I was a very hyperactive, hyperreactive kid. So I went to my parents like, yo, I'm having trouble with this racist shit at school. And I thought they would feel me because they were, you know, from Mississippi.
They're your parents.
Yeah, and my parents.
And they knew the history of your people.
Yeah, they were there. Yeah. But like, it to my parents, like they were like, yo, we've been through so much shit in Mississippi. Your racism doesn't even sound like a real issue to
them. Yeah, right.
They didn't mean it that way, but that's definitely how it came off.
Yeah.
And I was so hurt by that I just kind of closed off, said, well, fuck it. If y'all gonna treat me like I'm a bad kid, I'm gonna just be a bad kid then. And I made a decision, like fighting back. I was like, I'm gonna skip school, go hang out in the hood with kids I really want to be around, kids that look like me.
Yeah.
So that began my career of trying to just like living these dual lives, is just being in the burbs and then going out trying to be in the hood at the same time.
But do you remember like before you turned, like were you like just a good kid, or like you just didn't say much, or what was it like a dramatic sort of change?
I really had to force myself out of kicked. Like I was extremely introverted. I had a stutter.
You had a stutter?
Yeah, man. So I had to like when I was like
a bad one?
Oh man, it was bad. And how I got over it was rapping in front of people. Like, and it was.
Do you think the stutter was like a psychological thing, or like a fear thing, or what?
Yeah, it was a fear because I had a fear of speaking in front of people, and because I took like how I was raised, like you don't speak out of turn. I took that so literally that I was just a super quiet kid for a while. And then it got to the point where it was like, man, if I keep doing this, I'm gonna get my ass whooped every day. And, you know, so
with
I
the stuttering.
Yeah. So I fixed that. You know what I mean? As much as I could. And
so how was the plan? Was it your idea to just start rapping over the stutter?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like, I'm gonna rap. Rapping is what I wanted to do.
How old are you then? Like 12?
10 was when 10. I started. Like I bought my first Rakim CD.
Yeah.
And because I heard. I didn't know anything about Rakim at the time. I just, my big cousin was like, Rakim's the best rapper alive. I'm like, well, that's what I want to be.
Sure.
And so that's when I bought my first rap record, listened to it, and I was writing my own little raps. And we would go to school and battle. But like, I had a stutter, so I had to read the raps.
Yeah.
Wow, they were the worst battles of all fucking time. Like, your nose looks like a guy.
It was that bad?
Forever, bro. Oh. Oh, it took so long.
Were the other kids like laughing at
people? Yeah, kind of. I think then I thought so because I was definitely doing it every day, so I was getting validation from it.
Yeah, it's weird when you're around somebody with a stutter because, like, I mean, we're all, you know, relatively aware of people's, you know, when they have a problem. You got to be a pretty young kid to bust on a guy with a stutter. By 10 or 11, you would think they'd be a little nicer. But like, even just the other day, I was in a studio with a guy. I can't. What context was that? Where I was, you know, I was asking what I should do, and then he started, and he had that stutter where it was stopping. And there's just a moment where the entire time zone changes.
Right.
And you're like, okay, we'll just wait it out. Like, don't be rude.
That's what it was. And it was such a, looking back, it was such a rude thing to make people watch that battle, because it took all lunch period. And then on top of that, like, sometimes it didn't end. We would just be like trying to read a line, and you hear the bell, and all the kids like, oh, fuck.
It took too long.
Yeah. One of my cousins started going to school with me, and he got mad one day because he's like, I ain't even eat my pizza. Like, why you ain't go get the pizza and come back, man? But it gained a lot of confidence, though, because I started like reading up more about just stuttering in general. It's like, it's about slowing your mind down, letting your thoughts catch up. So I was like, well, if I talk faster and I rap faster, maybe I can catch up with how fast my thoughts are going. And so that's how I really learned to freestyle. I just started like relaxing and trusting myself.
So you read that when you were a kid, and because you were curious?
Researching is, I've been doing that forever, dude. I've been like, I used to be online at night, because I've been an insomniac since forever. So,
really?
Yeah, man. Oh,
so you're a high-strung kid. I was.
you'd have thought I had a mortgage.
You
know?
You were the middle kid?
Yeah. But my sister is like 13 years older, so I have like middle kid syndrome and oldest.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, because I was my mom's first, but I wasn't my dad's first. I was my dad's second.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah. But so you applied this idea, you came up with this concept around curing your stuttering. Like, if you rap faster, then it would keep up with your mind?
Yeah. Like, well, we were in science class, and I asked my teacher, like, how do I work on my stutter?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, the basis of your stutter is because your thoughts, your mouth is not moving as fast as your thoughts are.
Huh.
Like, or one of those two. Like, yeah. And so I was like, oh. And so that's what I just assumed. Hey,
if
I go faster, I think I'll be all right.
And your parents weren't helping?
No, not at all.
They didn't send you a doctor? Nothing?
No, we didn't have like full conversations then. So, and also I was really, people I'm comfortable with, it didn't like come out like that.
Oh, really?
No, not like, well, it did, but it's like, wasn't as drastic. It was very much like nerves and like anxiety. It was like, if I was nervous, and any, which was like anywhere that I wasn't comfortable, which was a lot of
places.
Yeah. for a long time.
Yeah.
The stutter hit me, bro. Like, speaking in front of people was the worst fear. But I was also like cracking jokes on the low. So there was like, there's been like a little competing, like.
Yeah. Well, that's person, it's a weird thing about being like a funny person is it all comes out of discomfort.
And yeah.
Right. So eventually you got to make fun of yourself or make fun of somebody else.
Yeah.
There's a fine line between, self-deprecation and fuck that guy.
Right.
Yeah. The line of bullying is always right there.
Yeah. You're right there.
If, like, I'm not going to take the hit. You're going to take the hit.
Yeah. I mean, I got so good at like roasting kids in school.
Well, that's good when you have that, like when like dozens of rap battles or whatever.
Yeah.
When you know there's a context, it's okay to do it.
100%.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, oh, now it's like being a basketball player.
Right.
Now I'm just showing my skill set.
Yeah. Right.
But I remember running into a kid like later on, like years later after we got out of high school, and found out I was his bully, and we hung out a lot.
And
I would just make fun of him all the time. But like, we were all making fun of each other.
Right.
I thought we were all doing it.
Oh, and you fucked him up.
Yeah. So he had this, bro, he had this whole like rom-com get back at the bully moment. Like, I was high as hell.
When was this? How many years later?
Oh, man, this was at least 8 years from high school.
Oh, wow.
So the kid's doing well.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten any big gig yet. I'm doing well in the comedy community, but no one in the real life knows anything about that shit.
Yeah.
So to him, I look like a bum. I'm walking in here with my friends, just trying to have a night. I'm high.
Yeah.
I see him like, oh, what's good, man? He's like, yeah, man. Chris Red.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Bitch, watch this shit. Bet you can't do this. And then he just kisses. He mouth kisses like three chicks just randomly. And I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And I can't think of one roast. I can't think of one comeback.
Yeah.
He's just like, it's like somebody somebody in the universe is just like, this is his moment.
Yeah, yeah. You just got to You're going to pay.
Yeah. And he's like, what now? I bet you broke. He said, I make $100,000 every 4 months. What do you do? I bet you don't have any money in your pocket. And he just mouth kissed another chick. I'm like, does he know these women?
Right. They don't seem to be resisting.
No, yeah. It seems choreographed.
It was all planned. Here he comes.
Yeah, I saw one girl by the bar just waiting to walk and get mouth kissed. No, but it was like the coldest, like, redemption moment for him that I didn't even know he needed. And I was like, man, I guess I'm just, that was my karma, bro. Yeah. I just had to eat that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you had it coming.
I had it coming, man. I was like, I was like, what did I do to this kid to make him do this?
Isn't that weird? Because, like, I mean, that's the interesting point, is that you think everyone's, you know, on the same page.
Yeah.
And then you if you really think about it, you're like, nah, that guy never said anything.
Right. That's what it was. It ended up being oh, everybody was talking shit except him.
Yeah, he was.
So he just felt like the punching bag.
Now you friends with that guy still?
We haven't talked since then. But Mike, I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, but you got closure. He got closure.
You got closure. You're doing well. Hope you didn't get nothing from all them random mouths kissed that night.
So once you start the rapping thing and you get confidence, now was that the thing you wanted to do?
Yeah, that was the thing I wanted to do the most.
Were you making CDs and shit?
I was using every extra dollar. I had so many fucking names, bro. My last name was Chief. That was a good name.
Chief?
Yeah.
That's simple.
Yeah. Yeah. It's to the point, you know, double meanings. Yeah. It's great. But before that, I was like, I wanted to have a mysterious vibe, so I went with John Doe.
Uh-huh.
But John Doe, like John Money, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
But also John Doe, like, you don't know.
So
it
had
me.
To have double meaning.
Yeah. I was a real big double meaning kid.
But there is a John Doe rock guy.
Yeah, there's a John Doe rock guy, but he was doing rock. He's old, I'm rapping.
Yeah, yeah. But no one knows that guy in your world.
Yeah. And no one knew me as John Doe, so I had to change it. I was like, if I keep being John Doe, no one's going to know.
It's too deep for everybody.
They was way above their head. So I went with so I changed it to Johnny Dollar, which was not great.
No, it's kind of jokey.
It's very jokey. And then I got into Greek mythology, and there's a lot of cool names in that.
Oh yeah, sure.
So I picked
Zeus.
I picked Callisto, which sounded cool.
Wow.
But it is a goddess.
Yeah.
So I was like, that doesn't match up that much.
Yeah. You're just hoping no one looks it up.
Yeah, you're right. Like, Callisto, don't look it up.
And you recorded under all these names?
I recorded under most of them.
Yeah. And what, were you selling your CDs?
For, yeah, man. I was selling
outside
them,
of clubs?
No, I was selling them on the streets. I was selling them at school.
Yeah.
I was, I made some decent little cash.
I remember when I realized that was a thing, you know, where guys would just come up to you. And some of it's good.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're not going to get, or they're trying to get a release, but they don't have a release, but they're still doing the work. I used to buy those CDs.
Really? Man, well, I don't think I ever bought one on purpose because I was always tricked into it.
Well, right. It was that fine line between it's sort of like, you want it, you know, it's sort of like, all right, just how much?
Right.
you kind of,
hi, man.
Yeah, whatever you need, buddy. I'll take it.
He's like, hey, yo, let me sign this for you, player. Let me sign this for you. I'm like, I don't own that.
Who are you? So you were doing that?
Yeah.
Swinging CDs?
Slinging CDs. I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to kind of rap and follow my dream.
So this is all through high school?
This is all through high school.
The rap thing?
Half of middle school. Like, I wasn't like confident enough to do a bunch of rapping in middle school, but I was like finding myself dance. I love to dance. So like that was my thing I found in middle school. Yeah,
you're a dancer.
I love dancing. At one point, I thought I wanted to
be a
dancer.
It's so funny you're really riding this line between like the whole sort of dichotomy of what you saw yourself as and what you wanted to be, like, you know, gangster with your cousin.
Yeah.
You just really wanted to dance, didn't you?
I just really wanted to dance. Shout out to my dog, Duke Deuce. He's a dancing gangster rapper right now, and I love him. He kills it.
Yeah.
He kills it. I'll send you some videos.
Yeah.
He kills it. But yeah, man, I definitely wanted to dance. I thought gangsters could do all of that. You know, I wanted to be a versatile gangster.
It depends.
Dance.
You know, I think there's a ceiling to the type of dance.
100%. I don't know if you could be a gangster and strip. Like, I don't know if that's...
Or do musicals. There's some musicals.
A gangster musical?
Yeah, they have, sure. So during this time, like, you know, these two worlds, like this cousin you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's a real guy.
Yes, he's a real guy. He's representative of two people in my life.
Okay.
There's a story of my, some of it is my cousin Keith.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is my friend Jeremy that I grew up with.
Okay. And they're collectively this guy.
And they're collectively Trey.
Okay, yeah, Trey. Yeah.
Trey represents like a few, like he represents them, and there's this, our stories are pretty much those two dudes, more Jeremy than anybody. Yeah. But like,
because you're like this nice kid who, like, you know, was nervous, and now in looking back you're finding that you have issues that you're dealing with, but you get the rap thing to solve your stuttering and awkwardness problem, and now you want to go full in
to and I cured my fear. I'm not really afraid of much else now. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was like, because I was terrified then, trying that like I wasn't, because I was just, all the characteristics about being an introvert weren't helping me with what I needed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I gotta be different. I gotta change this. I gotta figure this shit out.
So what really happened? You know, in terms of like you going into the hood.
The first couple times I got clowned crazy.
Like what do you mean? Like,
So the first time I went to the first time I went to the hood by myself. Like, I was with my homie Marcus.
Yeah.
And
coming in from the suburbs.
And our homegirl Ashley. Yeah. So we all went to school in the burbs, and we all went to the city to kick it with our cousins.
Oh, okay.
And just to hang around with the, you know, with the homies, the gangs that are around that we were affiliated with, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And so I had acted like I had been out to the West Side a bajillion times.
Right.
I had not. This is my first time. Yeah. So I'm
How old are you?
I'm 15. Yeah. Like 14 or 15 at this time. Right. 14.
Yeah.
And I got my act on, bro.
Yeah.
And this is my first major role. Not SAG. and so we all kicking it. People can see I'm nervous. I didn't know at the time though. You know what I'm saying? I'm just feeling like I'm natural and shit.
Yeah.
So then this girl Ashley, she's from out there. So she's like, "Hey, why don't you go grab some cigarillos, Chris, from the gas station?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah, why not?" But to me, it was the biggest moment of my fucking life, because I'm like, I ain't never been here before. Yeah. So I'm like trying to act natural, right?
Yeah.
But I don't look natural. So I'm just like, I walk, sway, move the hands a little bit.
Yeah.
Too much, you know? And then she said hi to her cousin, right? Yeah. Who was sitting in this car right by the gas station.
Yeah.
So before I walk in the door, dude's like, hey man, come here. You want some weed? I'm like, oh yeah. My goofy ass is like, oh, that's her cousin. They're cool people.
Yeah.
He's like, get in. So I get in the car like a clown, and I close the door, and there's a dude in the back seat. Dude's in the front seat. He's like, oh yeah, you want some weed, huh? And then dude came around and like put his arm around my neck, right? And I was like, what the fuck? I threw his arm off. I'm like, what the fuck is that shit, man? He's like, don't be getting in no car with no random motherfucker. What's wrong with you, nigga? It's the hood. And I'm like, that's your cousin. And she's like, who gives? I know him, nigga. You don't. And it was my first introduction to the hood for real. And they gave me shit. We went to this spot called The Circle.
Yeah.
It's where everybody kicked it.
Yeah.
And so we went to The Circle, and I just got clowned that whole day. But it was kind of like, after that, it was good. Like, like I was, you know, I mean, I had family there. Like, so it wasn't like I felt like I wasn't at home.
Sure.
But it was definitely my hazing.
But
for sure.
But was there a point where you wanted to sell drugs and stuff?
Yeah. I wanted to do all of that shit. And so I was like, I was selling weed for a lot of years. I just wasn't very good at it.
Yeah. But in the burbs.
All over.
Yeah.
Yeah, all over. But in the burbs. In the burbs, I was doing some other stuff.
Yeah.
Because my cousins and them used to like to, you know, run up in places, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so not going to tell you. So I'm not going to say your names.
Yeah, yeah. We don't need to get anyone in trouble.
Yeah. So the best places to do that were the burbs. So that was my contribution to the gang, was like, yo, I'll find spots. Yeah, we can hit.
You're the location scout.
It is okay. I'm the location scout for the game. Yeah. And I'm like, yo, I got houses. I set up the lick. I watch the schedule. I know when they go in and run out. And I was just set up. I would set up shit all the time.
Oh wow.
And so the burbs is where we would go to make money.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We used to before they had like, damn, this is aging myself. But before they had like those those alarms in stores.
Sure.
You can just walk out with whatever the fuck you want. Oh, all
before the things they click on there. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the snap on things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I would go buy liquor. I was in high school at the time.
Yeah.
Go buy liquor and then go to the school, go to high school parties, sell that shit for like $300. I would sell bottles of Hypnotic for $300. Like,
really?
So that was the kind of shit we would do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because we knew they had money. You know what I'm saying? So we're like, hey, we're gonna take advantage.
Was there ever a point where you know, what makes you turn around at a certain point? Because I have to assume that you get to, like, anybody who survives, you know, taking chances like that.
Yeah.
Like, you get to a point where you're like, yeah, this is it. I'm done.
Yeah, man. It was when my homie Worm died. His name was Worm.
That's a good name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's his real name?
No, but that's what we call him. That young guy looked like a worm. You know, he was a good kid, man.
Yeah. What happened?
Just like to smoke and play video games and my homie Jeremy had robbed some guys that were on his block. He didn't know that they were like gangsters from the city who just kind of moved out to the burbs because they had a little money. So that next day they found out he did it and they came and shot his house up. And Worm was the only one that died.
Huh.
And
he had nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do with it. And we had been locked up a little bit here and there and stuff like that. But like nothing crazy. I kind of had gotten away with it. So at this point, my ego was kind of there. But but I was seeing people like go down, and there was a next level of this shit. I was like, if I'm gonna do this, I have to take it up a notch, and that's where all the real fucking danger is. I was kind of like dipping my toe in
thing,
and out.
Right? Yeah, it's a weird thing to know that, because I knew that with drugs, you know, by doing drugs.
Yeah, really? You aware of it?
Yeah, because there's a place where you're gonna cross over and you're not gonna have a conscience anymore.
Right. That's it.
And that you're playing by a different set of rules, and it's a dangerous set of rules. And it exponentially the possibilities of you dying increases. Right.
Yeah. Truly, that's exactly what it is. It becomes like the risk isn't worth the reward of it all. And on top of that, it's like I always had these check-ins with myself, like, dog, are you really good at this? And I've done that with not just that, but like anything I've ever. I'm good at rapping.
Oh, good.
What happened is I didn't know who I was fully.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
On that, so I wasn't being as authentic as I could.
Right.
I also was trying to help so many different people that I was never focusing on finishing a thing fully. So I would always have like these drafts of songs that were good.
Yeah.
They needed to work.
Right.
And the technique. And I just wasn't like drilling it the way I did. I corrected that behavior with comedy.
Right.
Not only I was supposed to be doing this for sure, but like also that method made me so much better, and I applied it back to the music, and then like comedy music took off, and I was like, I had to work harder. And
but there was that point where, like, you know, that next level after Worm died.
Yeah.
You got scared.
Well, me and my cousin were like, do we want to end up like this?
Yeah.
This kid didn't even get to C-18. And
he didn't do nothing.
And he didn't do a thing. You know what I'm saying? It was just like me and my boy was like, yo, we're going to keep, you know, we kept selling weed and shit.
Yeah,
keep rapping. But like, as far as all the other shit, bro, we got to get, you know, we got to start figuring out how to like get out of this shit.
Right. Know? Was it hard?
No, I mean, no.
Well, you lived far away.
I did, and then someone had, like, I had did something, and then somebody had snitched on me, and so I had moved away to Milwaukee to live with my sister for like a year. And
really?
Yeah, and then by the time I came back, I was just out of sync with everybody, you know what I'm saying?
Thank God.
So I used that to like.
What'd you do in Milwaukee?
Sold some drugs off my porch. So weed, just weed, guys.
Yeah.
Sold weed off my porch and kicked it with my sister, got to know her a little bit better and just kind of lay low.
Yeah.
And like,
how old were you?
Figure out what I was going to do. I was like 20.
Oh, wow.
Ish, maybe 19. Maybe 19. I was like out of high school, just out of high school.
So you're doing, you're doing time in the self-imposed protection program. And you're thinking about your life.
I'm thinking about like, where am I gonna take this? Like, what am I actually gonna do? And I was still in the rap phase of my life then.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, we're just gonna like, man, I'm gonna rap, maybe start a label, you know what I'm saying? And just put everything I got into this.
Yeah.
And I was doing that already, but like without all the bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had some gigs at some colleges, and there were some like little things throughout. You know how it is when you're like building up, and there's like a little piece,
a little bit of
validation.
Yeah, a little bit of interest. Some guy comes up to you and goes, "You guys are good."
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody ain't going wow, but there's like four people that are like, "You're the best thing I ever heard."
Exactly.
And I'm like, one day everyone will say what you said.
No, just that.
This is that guy actually.
And he'll go to every show.
Oh, man. He'll just be swaying whether the beat's on or not. Yeah.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't until like, it was like 22 or 23 where I had literally from the point I could work.
Yeah.
Had spent every dollar trying to make rap work. And it just got to the point where I'm like, man, am I going to just keep being broke?
Well, did you have a moment with that too? Because like, I don't know, man. It's weird when you realize at some point you're a talented person, and you know that because you're doing shit.
Right.
But there is that moment where you're like, I don't think I'm good enough at this.
Yeah, it was like I don't think the way I feel like I'm gonna get on or become who I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think the vision I had here is the vision that's playing out. And I was like, if I keep going to this studio, laying these tracks, doing the same thing the same way, I think at 30, I'll still be here doing this in this way. And I just couldn't risk that.
It's a weird moment where you realize, like, you know, this could never go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I might not know it.
Right, exactly. Until it's too fucking late.
Right. And there's no, you can't do nothing.
It's like, what more proof do you need than 22 years of it not working?
Like, it's like, you're okay. Yeah. You're good.
Yeah.
But
I mean, truly, I was like, I could rap my ass off.
Yeah.
Still can't.
Yeah.
But like, it just wasn't clicking.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, I need
to switch. How's the dancing going at that time?
So when I stopped rapping, I was tunnel vision with rap.
Yeah.
These other skill sets were just, I wanted to be the rapper that could do everything.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So after I stopped rapping, I looked inward. I was like, okay, what other things am I good at that could be my next dream I chase?
Yeah.
Fuck going to school.
Right.
I chase dreams.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. I'm a dreamer.
I'm an
active
fucking
dreamer.
Yeah. And so I was like, I want to dance.
Yeah.
So I went to an audition.
Yeah.
For one of R. Kelly's videos.
Uh-huh.
And I got the audition.
Yeah.
Did well.
Yeah.
Got the gig.
Yeah.
And then I was going, got the callback.
Right.
I was going to the callback.
Yeah.
Before it even started, these motherfuckers were like, they were just catty and like talking shit to each other, but in dancer. You know what I mean? I was just leaving gangsters and rappers and shit. And now I'm over here with these catty ass motherfuckers and they're like, bitch, you can't even Perrier. I'm like, I'm good. And I didn't even do the callback. I walked dead out that place and I was like, I don't love it this much.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, none of that shit would have turned me off if I really wanted to do it.
Right.
You know, but after I left the dream of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know this don't feel right.
It's a moment like I had. There's a moment where so I can't remember. Someone shared it. Like I went on an audition. Like I barely had an agent, but they sent me on an audition for like a Doritos commercial. So I can't remember.
Yeah.
But all I know is I've been told that I walk into a room and there's a bunch of comics in that room waiting to do this, and I'm just like, fuck this. I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
Fuck that.
Not for
shit.
Fucking potato chips. You know, like they.
Just, you gotta know yourself, man.
Well, yeah, because like, what are you willing to, you know, how you don't want to sell out for nothing.
For nothing?
Yeah.
And I was worried about at the time of like beating one of these motherfuckers' asses and then getting in trouble for that shit. Like, like, I don't want.
Well, turns out R. Kelly got in trouble for everybody.
He was good with trouble. Yeah,
yeah.
I actually lucked out.
Yeah. So dancing's over.
Dancing is over.
Okay.
And so right before comedy, I was completely lost, spiraling.
How old are you then? 24?
I'm still 22.
Okay, you're 22. So you're on schedule. So you're not going to be a criminal.
Now,
you're not going to be a rapper.
I'm not going to be
Dancing's
a rapper.
Dancing's out.
So
and
then,
now you're lost.
This is the most random thing.
Yeah.
I became a model manager, bro.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you just you're just looking for a hustle.
Hustle.
Yeah.
When you talk about those people with like 15 slashes on a business card, was me.
Hell yeah. Do you have one of those cards still?
What?
You still got them?
Man, I wish I could. Look, I'm going to try to look for one. I'm going back home, Mississippi, like it to after this. I'm gonna I will send you some.
Yeah.
If I could, I hope I can find some.
Just have your picture on it?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, dude. What?
with the silly writing, the cursive.
Yeah, with the I think the name colors. of the company Bavira or some shit. Like, it was like
a model manager. And, so you're an on the level pimp.
No, oh man, yeah, it's what it felt like. But not at first though. At first it was just I was at this club that I had been trying to get into for a long time with a couple of friends, and they just happened to be pretty as hell. And second. R. Kelly visit, his people were there, and they were scouting for one of his artist's videos.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to meet with my friend, Cap. And what's up, Cap? And Cap was like, hey, could you come and be and pretend you're my manager? Because I don't feel safe with these guys, and I just want to make sure everything's on the up and up. So I was like, I don't know how to be a manager, so I Googled some shit real quick. 10%. Mm-hmm. And then I went over there, and I just played the position.
Yeah.
And she got the gig. I drove her to the gig. Just to make sure everything's cool.
Sure.
We got the check.
Yeah.
I got my 10%. That next week, I had four more girls that were like, that I'm like submitting for shit and driving to places. And I'm just managing and these models.
Where are you at?
I had just moved back.
To Chicago?
Aurora. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Chicago.
Yeah.
And to Aurora, because I was rekindling things with my parents at the
time. Right, right.
Also, I was broke as fuck. Yeah. Needed help. But I was like,
some place to sleep. They let you in the house?
They're like, hey.
Remember me, son? Son,
can we work through it? And my mom's like, I guess we could work through it. She had just lost her job. So like, we were both in the right place for change.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was cool. Like, you know, my mom's always been a good woman.
This one, you're 22. Strong woman.
Yeah. But it was something that made her vulnerable in a way that I needed to see her. And then, like, I was the same way. And so we were able to really, like, get over our shit.
So that was that moment.
Yeah.
Like, so you didn't know what you were doing or who you were. And she had time on her hands and was a little beat up herself.
Yeah. And so in that way, we got close. We got super close in that time.
That's good.
It took some work, but, you know. And I was managing these models. I was actually making some money. Some decent money.
Really?
It was like... decent money to me. Like,
well, what did they do? It was for videos or for showing up at parties and that kind of stuff.
We did a few of those, but it would like be videos. There was a thing called Remix the Runway. It was like this event, this fashion music concert event,
right?
And so I would book for that.
Like,
I booked for that for 3 years, and then there would just be like different like events.
We
were booking for
all on the level shit.
On the level, dog.
And I felt safe with you. That's good.
Yeah, I was very like. I didn't want to be the dude that was just like being a sleazeball.
Creepy,
about
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to take it serious. And plus, a lot of girls were my friends.
Yeah.
Or I had become friends. I was spending so much time with them. So, you know. And so then, but then it got to a point where I was like, am I really going to just manage motherfuckers? Because it got to that ceiling like we're talking about where I had to go to the next level with it. I'm like, do I want to manage?
Build out the business.
Yeah,
get more girls.
Right.
Yeah.
And because there were starting to be these rumors of like pimping and all this other stuff. So I was like, I have to take it up a notch to either kill those rumors and just really, really go hard at this.
Yeah.
Or take one more shot at my own dreams real quick.
At that time, which was?
I had no idea. I just knew I should try something else.
Because like if you stay in those games, you're just going to be the guy with different business cards every couple years.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm selling hats 1 year. Like I don't cowboy 5950s. We got hats.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's one of them things.
Yeah.
So like it was really me playing video games high as hell with my homie Marcus I was rapping with. That we were not rapping at this point. We were just playing video games, smoking weed. And then I saw a commercial for Second City, and I was like, huh.
Really? On TV?
It's on TV, which I've never seen again.
Huh.
But it was just dead ass, and I went, I hadn't really heard of Second City at all at this point. And so I went up to my pops, like, yo, you heard of Second City? And he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I know Second City. Yeah. And he started naming people. And I was like, oh, shit, maybe I'm funny.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And my boss like, I mean, oh, let me try it.
What's your dad do? What does he do?
Oh, my dad, he did a lot of things, but he was a loan officer for churches in the inner city.
Okay.
So he would help like black churches get funds to for to keep their churches or to build out and expand and stuff like that.
Okay.
But he had a few other jobs before that.
Yeah.
One was a repo man in Detroit. So my boy been shot at a few times.
Yeah.
Actually, that was his last day of work. He said he got shot at. He's like, shit ain't worth this.
I'm going to find an easier environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good guy, though.
Oh, yeah. My dad's cool as shit.
Oh, he's supportive.
Yeah, he was the, you know, while he didn't agree all the time with things, and he definitely like wanted to see me do well.
Yeah,
and he out of the two at growing up, he was the more lenient one with dreams.
Uh huh.
Because he was a baseball player.
And he had one.
He chased dreams. My mom's did it by the book. You know what I'm saying? She did it very, very well. So she's like, don't tell me how to make it. I did.
Yeah.
You know, and he hurt his knee. So he had a little more patience with my dreams.
Right.
You know, even if he didn't know how to support me vocally every time.
Yeah.
He was still like.
Yeah.
He was sliding me a little 20. Because I had no money. Like, slide me a little 20. Yeah. Like, all right, man, go ahead, hug. Yeah, you know? Yeah. So he would look out. And I remember he paid for my first few classes at Second City so I could just see what it was.
And what was it like going over there?
Oh, man. I was coming straight out of this world of just a very different world to this what seemed like a corny ass world to me of just like a bunch of grown people walking around a room filling the space. And
mostly white, right?
Yeah, mostly. Yes, all white.
Yeah.
And they were just, but it was something about it that I really loved. It was like, it was just, I couldn't, the class itself didn't sell me right away.
Yeah.
I went and saw an IO show and I saw like Tim Robinson and a few Sam Richardson and a few other folks that are like fire at this.
Sam
shit.
And Tim.
Yeah. And I see them improvising and I see Tim improvise as 12 different dudes.
Yeah.
And I'm like angry. Like, this is not fucking off the top, bro. You know what I mean?
Right.
He thought he
was faking it.
Yeah. And then as I see another show, I'm like, oh, these niggas are this good. Oh, this is fire.
Yeah.
It's like freestyling, but funny, you know? Yeah. And so that's why I was like super in love with improv, because it fed my freestyle.
And those guys, Tim and Sam, are so, they're out there, dude. Do it.
This was before the world knew that they were that good. Yeah. You know what I mean? But they were like, they were at the top in Chicago of improv before I knew how to do it.
Yeah.
And so, but then people were saying that, you know, you had to pick improv or stand up. I was coming from rap. I didn't give a fuck about the separation. I'm doing it all. I'm doing comedy.
Yeah, right.
So I did all of it. I did sketch writing.
You get into the classes and you go through how many years of that?
For the improv, I did every class you could take. I put all my cash into that.
Yeah, and is there a tier don't you become part of the crew and then how does that work?
Yeah, so it's like the introductory classes. Yeah. Then you have the conservatory, which is like the elevated. You have to audition for.
Right.
And then they have these different companies, these bizcos and different companies that you can like work and get a little money from. And then they have the
doing shows.
Companies. Yeah, doing shows.
How far did you get? What'd you do?
I did it all, bro. I toured. I did.
You toured with Second City.
We were the first crew to go international, so we went to London to perform, and that had been my first time out the country.
Yeah.
And then I was doing stand up on like along with it. So
you're doing both. So you're doing like Zanies and shit.
No,
in Chicago.
Bert was an asshole, and I hated Bert.
From Zanies.
Zanies, downtown. So I never did Zanies, and he never let me do Zanies. But so I did Laugh Factory. I did like Jokes and Notes. I did everything.
The Laugh Factory. Did you ever do it when it was the theater, like the Lakeview? Wasn't there a movie theater you used to book? That guy Ritter used to book comedy there.
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah.
I did it. But so who are you coming up with then? In stand up over there, what's that crew of the Chicago guys?
You had Drew Michael. Had like Rail had just kind of went to L.A.
Yeah,
Hannibal had just left the scene.
Yeah,
TJ had just left the scene.
Okay, yeah, and Mike Holmes and
Mike
Kumail.
Holmes.
Pete Holmes, Mike and Kumail, weren't they Chicago guys?
Yeah. But they were a little bit
before
ahead.
You. Yeah,
yeah. D-Ray was still kind of D-Ray Davis was still kind of around, but he was in L.A. doing the shows and stuff, and then. You had like they were all kind of OGs. I'm trying to remember my squad, like of who's. I'm sure there's a lot of people.
Yeah, so you're really doing both.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in the scenes though.
Yeah,
and I've got a lot of ridicule for that shit. You know what I mean? And then
from the comics.
Yeah, yeah. All the comics were shit.
Improv people aren't going to bust your balls for doing stand up.
Well, yes, they bust your balls passive aggressively. They're like, I know you're a stand-up, but, you know, it's not about you just getting the joke. It's about everyone getting the joke.
Oh, so you had to deal with that.
Yeah.
This is not like, your show. Yeah, it's our show.
And I'm like, all right, man, I'm learning.
Yeah, but you learned how to, like, I find that the people that did improv, because I never did, and it was sort of not the thing to do. There was definitely two different worlds, right. And I never even thought about it. But you learn how to write. You learn how to work with other people. You 100%. Know how to direct a little bit and all that shit, right?
100%. You know how to, like, kind of, like, think on your feet, which you can get just by being on stage enough. But like, there's a special kind of like, I love an elevated like improv experience with an audience member. I don't like the easy like 1-2 punching. You know what I mean?
Oh no. Yeah, or, like, if you really get into it,
set up like, just to pay off a thing. You know, it's like no, like really just go off and see where this goes.
Yeah, quick. Make it real.
Yeah.
So when does it start to work out? Is your old man on board now that you're doing shows and shit?
Oh man, they're both of them. They're my biggest fans.
Oh great.
Yeah. But it started to click. They both started to click. Right around my sixth year was when like I was starting to feel like strong. Like they were like from year one to three, I was trash. Like,
yeah.
I was just bad because I was. You know, I was good enough, but I was bad. I wasn't. I look back and I'd be like, "That's a bad comic."
You know what I mean?
With some promise,
right?
I just was spread too thin, trying to learn too many things,
right?
But then they started like after like year four, it was like, "Oh, I'm starting to feel it." Although it was still like, I feel stronger in improv than I'm doing my writing. Or my writing feels stronger than my improv right now.
Sure.
But then, like around like, year five, like six, it was like, "Oh, I know how to use." My superpower a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I know how to like separate them.
Yeah. And you're conscious of it.
Yeah.
And that's a weird time when you feel that where like some of that fear goes away.
Yeah.
And you're not like jumping, you know, you're not on the edge. Like you got to get, you know, just sort of like, it just happens.
I miss the edge because now I have so much fun with doing both.
Right.
That like my shows be long as hell.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so you know, I don't know when to, curve the improv if I'm just having it ball.
Well, sometimes. I don't know. Like, I think it's weird though when you go back and forth. Like, I don't know how much you cut in the special, but you know, you were definitely doing some crowd work and stuff.
Yeah.
And there was one point in the special where there's a cut after you do some pretty good crowd work and you just go back to the bit and they're sort of like, they're amazed that you remembered.
Yes. That had happened on my tour
sometimes you can't follow your own crowd work.
Yeah. Truly. So that these are the two things I was worried about with the special. Because I was like, I knew I wanted to improvise in the special, but I knew I wanted to have it be thematic and tie in, but I didn't want to plan it.
Right.
And I was like, but I hope I'm not chasing my laugh in the middle of the show. You know what I'm saying? I'm not chasing this fucking moment.
Yeah.
And I hope that the me calling back my set, that moment happens on camera. Cause you know how you could be on the road and you're like, that was my special on the road.
I know, yeah. And you never get it back.
And you never get it back. You never do it again. thing was happening so many times. But then it was like the lead up to the special, like the last 5 hours I practiced, the moment never came. And I'm like, nigga.
What, the callback?
Yeah. I'm like, you can't. I mean, it's one of those things that it's a skill set I know I have, but I can't force it.
But you kind of can.
You can. Yeah, I mean, that night I knew exactly what I was doing. Right. I was like, when I do this, it's gonna fuck them up. You know what I mean? I was just feeling good.
Yeah.
And I was like, I knew exactly what I was doing. And like, and
it's okay to know
it
that.
It felt great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they like the trick.
They do. They You know, love the technique works.
Yeah. And they like it. You know, it's like, oh, that's from the other before.
Yeah.
You're trying to brag.
Man, it's like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I will say I had a ball shooting that thing. I feel like I enjoyed myself too much. I laughed so much more than I usually do.
Well, it's funny when you watch yourself, because like when you're younger, you laugh out of a sort of insecurity,
right?
But then sometimes, like as you get older, you laugh because you're like, "Fuck, I just did that."
Yeah, it's kind of like, "Damn, I'm really good at this. I'm having a fucking ball."
Exactly.
You know, and so I like in that way, I do like it because I feel like we're all the show really feels like it's like a kind of like a storytelling party a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it did. And the crowd work was you lucked out.
Man, right? Yeah. I'm like, what if we get duds?
Yeah, exactly.
Man, because they were like, well, I had like one of the best, like, you know, the crowd seater. She's amazing. Her name escapes me. I'm so sorry. I love you so much. I'm just I'm just really tired. But she was like asking me like, yo, who do you want in the front? And it was really skewing to my like, I don't want to plan too much.
Yeah.
Just mix it with some couples. You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
right. But you didn't know anybody's occupation.
Nah.
Or anything.
Like varying ages of couples.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some single folks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then whoever you want.
Yeah, yeah. And it worked out. So that was all planned. That was it. Like, I got to remember that. Because I don't recall any of my specials having a seater who was that.
Well, they knew I was going to improvise.
Oh, so they wanted to make sure that he had some meat.
Yeah, and yeah. I was like, it was just like, yo, make sure no family in the front.
Yeah. Never. I don't even want to see him.
Yeah. No family in front. So they had like a super dope section.
Yeah.
Way up top. Yeah, it was tight. And then I was like, just make sure you have some couples that I can readily see on camera.
Right.
And that's really what it was for. It wasn't for me planning. It was more for like, I need to make sure that you can see these people.
Sure.
Because I have this like split screen. Thing.
Yeah. I've never seen that before.
Yes. Yes. That's all I wanted. I'm done. that's all I wanted, man.
Because usually they use it to cut away. You know, you see the audience to do cuts. And I've gotten away from that. I think everyone's sort of like, I don't want to see them at all.
Bro,
right?
I swear, I think I'm. Shout out to my the editor Sean, because I feel like I was yelling notes like, I don't want to see them.
Yeah.
Why are we seeing them?
Yeah,
again?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it feels really needy.
Yeah.
When it's not a like I mean, there's obviously natural points where it just feels natural.
Yeah,
to
sure,
do it,
sure.
But like those points are so much smaller than like the specials that are out there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to pinpoint anybody's, but like,
in terms of crowd work.
Yeah. In terms of seeing the crowd so many times.
No. I think that's going out of favor.
Yeah. It's like, don't tell me when to laugh visually.
Yeah,
You know, just roll with it.
Yeah, yeah. And also, they used to use it to cut away. And then, like, you see all those old specials where they're just cutting to people with bad haircuts from a different era.
You know,
for no reason. And then you see them twice. I'm like, how's that guy taking up any screen time?
Yeah, I don't get why we have to see this man with this weird laugh.
They just did it because they wanted to be able to cut.
Yeah.
So like they want to take a chunk out. So like show the laughing guy. And now we're back with this thing. We lost 20 minutes. Whatever.
It
was for cutting. So wait. So when you're, how does the SNL happen?
SNL happens.
You're doing stand up. You're doing improv.
Yeah.
And you got a little name for yourself in Chicago or what?
Yeah. I mean, I got a name for myself in Chicago.
Yeah.
I've started to be. I'm like in LA, so I'm building a name for myself in LA at this point.
Oh
too.
Yeah, yeah.
I had just done the pop star Never Stop.
That's like where around the time I met you before SNL.
Yep. And I had just done pop star, so that was like my first big movie.
What is it? Oh, the movie. Okay.
Yeah. Andy Samberg and those guys.
Oh, yeah.
But I was still broke. You know, I had made some movie money, but I was, you know, it was just enough.
Yeah, people don't realize that, you know, it's not like, you know, your first movie or these TV spots, you're not making
bread. And also
doing day jobs.
I was very much like, you gotta put all your eggs.
Well,
I was doing day jobs that were all like focused, all creative focused. I was teaching kids on the South Side of Chicago improv and writing. And then I was like,
that's good.
And I was writing commercials for this ad agency because they just had
local?
Heard about me.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, we wrote some KFC commercials and some other shit. They hired a nigga for the chicken commercial. God damn, motherfuckers.
No one has to know.
I do want to know where that guy, love that chicken for Popeye. I want to know where he's at.
Yeah.
Because
no one
sings about chicken like that.
Well, you're gonna run into him now. You'll be getting a call. I'm right here, man.
I've been here the whole time.
And I could use a job.
What do you love? I'm singing for you right now.
So what, they come out to Chicago for showcase?
No, they were in LA.
Oh.
And I was, at that point, I was like, when I go to LA, I'm just trying to be on as many shows as possible. And I got a call and they were like, yo, they want to see you at a showcase. And I'm like, okay.
Was it Lauren or no?
No, it was Lindsay Shookus and I guess a few other, whoever she was with.
Yeah.
And they come to Chicago and do those auditions all the time.
Sure.
I could never get one in Chicago. Because in the improv scene, I was too much stand-up, and
really?
I wasn't around them too much. I'm telling you, it was a whole
thing.
You
didn't have any friends, huh?
That would take I had a lot of friends, and like no...
But no one who would put you on the showcase?
No one who put me on the showcase.
Wow.
It was threatening.
You got a beef?
Yeah.
You got a resentment?
Man, I don't know what it was. Yeah. I think I had too many shows, I guess.
But I mean, but like, are you mad at the person that held you back?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Nah. Because I don't really know who. Right. I couldn't really pinpoint.
He said, no, Chris. Not on this one.
I just blamed the theater folks. I just blamed whoever like was the head of you know, I was like, oh, these motherfuckers don't see me, but it's all good. And then I was in that phase of my life, I was in a place where everybody wanted SNL so much that I was like, fuck that, I don't want that shit.
Yeah.
And then I got the audition and I was like, oh, well, maybe, I mean, I just go see what it is.
Yeah.
I just go be funny. It's another show. I'm just going to do another show.
But you wanted it.
I mean.
Oh, you mean in terms of how you were going to handle the audition, you didn't want to psych yourself out.
Yeah. I definitely wanted it, but I wasn't ever going to admit that, even to myself at that time. I was just like, I'm just going to go. I had six shows that day along with that showcase. I'm like, it's a show.
Right.
So I'm three drinks in. I walk in there. I fucking kill it. And I can't believe I did, because I was like, didn't care.
Yeah.
And then they hit me and they were like, yo, that was amazing. They want you to fly in. And I was like, all right. So then I went in. I had some strong, like two drinks and I went in.
Before you did the studio?
Yeah. And I killed it there. So they gave me the call back.
And then you got to go meet Lauren?
Yeah. So in between that call back, you got to meet Lauren, right?
How many drinks did you have before that?
So they hit me and they're like,
you gotta time your high for that one.
They're like, any notes? I was like, any notes? And they were like, yeah, just tighten up. And I was like, oh, it's because I was tipsy as fuck. So I was like, all right, no drinks this time. I have a half of one, and then I'll be good. Yeah. But I wasn't nervous to meet Lauren. I was like excited because there was so much mystery.
So you did two auditions, and then you had the Lauren meeting.
I did the first audition. We did a callback and Lauren meeting in the same time.
Oh, so you did the studio and Lauren the same time?
Yeah.
So how long did you wait for Lauren?
A day and a half, because he was flying from the Hamptons in his helicopter and then decided not to come.
Oh. Wow, so that's pretty dramatic waiting. Usually he's just in the other room and you don't understand what the fuck is going on. But you got helicopter treatment.
Yo, I got helicopter.
He decided to go back. Didn't want to fly down.
That's what they said, you know what I mean? And I was like, man, hey, if you got turn around helicopter money, I don't know. There's not much I can say to you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So then I finally met him, and it was a really good. Like, we, you know, we kind of hit it off from the start.
He's good.
Good dude, man. He's you know, he is who he is.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I, you know, I, that was demystified for me when I talked to him, because I didn't get the show and I held it, you know, like I had a weird bitterness about it for decades.
Really?
And he agreed for an interview and he explained to me what happened. It was a good enough explanation, but you do realize that no matter how rich he is or whoever the hell you think he is or whatever he's done, he's still a guy that just goes to work at that building and runs a TV show.
Yeah, dude. And he loves doing it. Yeah. And he's like, And he just and he's like focused on the show and making that show good.
So, it was funny that in the special when you talk about fans of SNL
being
like specifically white way.
Yeah.
I never thought of that, but it's kind of true.
It's just the way that most black culture looks at In Living Color is the way that SNL fans look at SNL.
And The Color was like, what, two seasons? Three seasons?
But I'm not saying this to say that there's not fans of all colors
of
SNL.
Sure.
But if you put a pie chart together, they would be majority white. And that's fine.
Well, yeah, because it is like, it's interesting because it's a white show.
Yeah.
And the thing is that Living Color was a specific cultural event for black people.
Exactly.
You know, it was the Wayans and everybody, and it was all black.
Right.
Except for Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Weird with a rubber face.
Yeah.
But funny as hell.
But SNL, they've had issues around diversity.
Yeah. And so, like, all
representation. I always fuck that word. I have to realize that the new word is representation.
New word is representation. Yes. You got to get that shit right.
I know.
Right.
I'm getting it. I'm sorry. Okay. They're pretty good now. They're representing everybody now.
I will say, I was a part of the most diverse diverse era of SNL has ever been, and it's still very diverse now.
And so you're just leaving tight. Now?
Yeah. I was always debating. This was before I knew the contract, but I was always like, if I get it 4 years, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know? And I was screaming 4 years forever, and then you get in there, and you know, and I've always loved that job as much as I hated the job. And I think it's what makes it a beautiful place to work at,
right? Because
it keeps you just feeling something,
yeah, yeah,
and working for something,
yeah.
And you're,
and it's, you're lit up, man. It's,
yeah,
it's live. It's real time.
And there's nothing like
And, and the competitiveness of the week.
Oh my
god! Wait to see what gets on, what doesn't get on. If you're going to be on, if anyone's going to do your shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's that whole thing, and you're creating in a vacuum too, in a way,
because
because there's so many things you can't get away with, but you're trying to get away with, with certain shit.
Right.
And so in that way, I was like, man, I don't want to leave until I've learned everything I can from this place.
Sure.
You know, and then, you know, when it came down to this year, this summer, I mean, this year I lost one of my best friends.
I'm sorry about that, dude. It was so terrible.
Man, he,
I'm sorry about him. Jack. Yeah,
thank
man.
You, man. I miss him so much. And what we did together was so fire. And
what was that? The
bust
show?
Down.
Yeah, yeah. That was like, because I used to see that guy at the Comedy Store, and I met him a few times, and
yeah,
he said some nice things about a very specific joke of mine, which I was very flattered by, because he just seemed like such a, you know, like he was all lit up. He had that shiny kind of like charisma to him, you know?
Yeah, man. He could control the room.
Did you see that coming?
Very funny. No, man. No, I mean, there was, you know, there's always, no. Nah, he was always talking shit. We would always talk shit. We were dark in that way. Like, it was never, no one ever thought he would actually do it.
So, but he had depression?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I should say, we should say his name.
Jack Knight.
Jack yeah. Knight.
On my special, I wear a JK on the back, and it's for my boy, man. But
did that spark you to get serious with your shit?
I've always been serious, Mark.
No, I mean about the issues.
I was already on my way. We used to talk all the time about that, like about just the
depression,
the depression and like
really
how I'm feeling. Yeah, we would talk. We had like one like 3-hour conversation about just kind of everything. It was like a couple days before.
Oh my god!
So I was glad. I was like really glad. I was on like a plane delay randomly.
Yeah,
and we just called him and we just were talking shit.
Huh.
And I was so glad I had that convo with him. But us making our show and like me coming from SNL and then doing like a show that was all us and just like
and Sam.
Yeah, yeah. It's me, Sam J, Langston Kerman, and it was just very much us. And so funny, and I was like, man, I don't, you know, and I lost my other homie, Teddy Ray, and so it was like, bro, I gotta spend time doing what I really want to do, like, and because we don't know when we gonna go, you know what I'm saying? We've lost so many damn comics.
What happened to Teddy?
Teddy passed away.
Yeah,
yeah.
How's that?
I think in the pool, man. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
That wasn't that long ago either. Right?
No, it wasn't, man. It was like a couple weeks after Jack.
Right.
Yeah, it was a tough one, man. So I was like, bro, I wanna be able to like get out and work with my friends.
So that was one of the reasons you get out of SNL too.
Yeah, and also like I'm just ready to kind of
how many years you gonna put in?
5.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I feel like 5 was 5.
That's right. It's not too little, not too much.
Not too
little.
You know,
a year later than you planned.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you didn't get stuck.
Yeah, I could have done one more, but like I won't regret it.
But were you like everyone else is leaving?
No, I wasn't that. It was people were writing like that, but it's not that at all.
Yeah.
For me, it was like I'm gonna miss those people, but that gave us more to play with. Like it was so many people there that you're fighting for very little time, and I'm like, bro, I don't know how much longer I can fight for 2 minutes,
right?
Or five minutes.
Oh, so it was always week. Competitive, but when there's, you know, 23 players.
Bro, and it's like, I can go do shows.
Yeah.
I can go make I can go do other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to leave this thing bitter as shit.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, so it just felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I'm working on some exciting shit. And I'm
yeah.
And I haven't focused on just kind of like stand-up being the major thing. Like, I've been juggling it, and I've definitely put all my time, as much time as I possibly can. But it's going to be cool.
We
cool
did the special. You worked that out.
Yeah, yeah.
That took a little time.
I never took breaks. So on my off weeks from SNL, I was on the road
pounding away.
Yeah,
and where's the how's the self help business? You know, in terms of where you at with that? You feeling good about the therapist and stuff?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. We're 2 years deep now.
Yeah,
and I like it a lot.
Yeah,
you know, my anxiety has been peaking.
How's that manifest for you though? Like, because you're working all the time. So, what's the anxiety? What is it usually about? because I have anxiety problems, and I've been having a little bit of a hard time with it because I've had it on and off all my life. But for some reason, like what I do is I worry about shit.
Yeah, I worry and I spiral. So thoughts are just like, it's just like rapidly. Just...
But you're just making up shit that's going to make you crazy, and you can't control it.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking of the worst case scenarios, and it gets to a point where it's just kind of like debilitating. Like I just like isolate.
Because did Jack have that?
In his way.
But he was more classic depressed.
I mean, honestly, Jack was dope. Jack was just, he wasn't like walking around depressed. He had depression, but
I find that the only reason I ask that, we need to talk about, we can't speak for the dead, and he's your friend, but like if I let my anxiety go long enough, I get depressed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was dipping like every 4 or 5 days until I started like, so I'm on Wellbutrin now.
And that
really helps a lot. Yeah, like with the spirals. Yeah. Like I never go as low as I was going. Okay. And I was going low for years. I just thought I would have to, like every other week, I'll just have a day or two where I'm just not going to see people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I just
kind of
like dealt with it that way until I was dating somebody, and they were like, hey, you know, why don't you try this? And I was always scared of it changing, like,
oh, you mean the pills? Yeah,
yeah. And but then like this is like super mild, and it just,
yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah. And I took it, and I was like, oh my god, people feel like this.
Yeah,
you don't have to feel like that.
Wow.
You got the
right one.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so that changed everything.
Oh good. Well, that's great, man. And what do you got, what are you working on now? Movies?
Yeah, man. We got the special, but then I got a couple projects with Broadway Video.
Oh yeah,
working on one for Audible with Will Steven.
You're gonna be working for Lauren the rest of your life.
Rest of my life, man. I can't get away from the man. No, I love the dude. And we're doing Cyber Monday, which is gonna be a movie. We're shooting that. They're doing the deals now, so I can't say we're shooting it soon.
Good.
And then. And I'm working with some folks. I'll come back to tell you who.
Okay.
But we're working on a TV show.
Oh, good.
And a movie. I kind of want to do a horror comedy, so I'm working on that. And
call Marlon Wayans. He loves that shit.
Man, he loves that shit, don't he? Shout out, scary movie.
Yeah, I just did a Corden with him.
Yeah.
And him and I, we have a funny relationship. I just can't help but bust his balls. He laughs because we did Respect together, so we became friends.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
But he's in another movie that's kind of a scary movie.
Yeah.
But it's a family scary movie. He didn't write it. He's just in it.
He's just in it. Yeah. Get that check, man.
He's funny.
Family scary movies are always fun. Yeah. It's all like, ooh.
It's light, but you know, you
I say that, Marlon, if you ever listen to this, I say that only because I'm a true horror fan. So I look at family movies and I'm just like, oh, that's soft. That's nice. That's horror for the suburbs,
right? You like the horror?
Oh, I love it, man. I think I love it because I've been watching them forever, but also it has the same kind of like rhythm as comedy.
It does, actually.
And I
can deal with it sometimes. I get a little impatient with horror.
Really?
Yeah, because like, let's just get on with it. Kill the guy. What are we doing?
what are we doing here?
How is this going to take?
I get impatient if it's like no meaning to like, there's like a show out now called Slasher, which is just a guy killing people for no reason. And I'm just like, I don't like
no
that.
Story?
Just no killing? Story. Just like, just different scenarios where people getting slashed.
It's
up.
Just like murder porn.
Yeah, I'm like, well, this is not fun for me, bro.
I gotta get into it more. My girlfriend likes it. I mean, there's some of it I like, you know, but maybe there's some old school shit that I gotta get.
There's some really good shit out there. Barbarian is a great one.
Yeah,
yeah. Barbarian is super dope. Doctor Sleep is one of my favorites.
Yeah. These are shows or movies?
These are movies.
Okay.
Yeah, but I like horror too because there's. It's easy to fall into the pitfalls being a hack. Same as comedy. There's so many like things.
It's all been done. Yeah,
yeah, it's all been done. So it's really challenging to make a good one. Yeah. So when you do, it's like, oh shit.
And that's the plan.
That's make the plan. I'm gonna try.
All right.
You know, I'm gonna get after it.
Good to talk to you, man.
Man, it's great to talk to you, bro.
And finally,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. About goddamn time.
Yeah, that's right. Do you live? Are you gonna stay in New York?
I'm in Harlem.
Okay.
I'm gonna stay in Harlem. I'm gonna be in LA a bunch.
All right, I'll see you over there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, buddy. Chris Redd, the show, the comedy show, the special. Why Am I Like This? Streaming on HBO Max. And if you could, please hang out for a second. All right, folks, today's archive episode that we are highlighting is episode 642 with Michaela Watkins. Now, Michaela Watkins is a close friend of mine. She was a close friend of Lynn Shelton's as well. But in the episode, we talk about how she is one of the few former SNL cast members who is honest and open about how she didn't have a great time at SNL. And this is a little bit of that.
I like Lorne a lot. I respect him, but I didn't want to be... Here's the thing. I didn't want to... I thought our relationship would happen organically. So I never pushed one with him.
Right.
I never kissed ass. I never... And every time... And I was really intimidated by him, but I felt like over time, I'm going to get to know him as a person and he'll get to know me as a person. And I trusted that that would happen.
Right.
So I don't think... I never kissed ass or anything. I never... seeked people out. And every once in a while, you know, one of the cast members is like, you should go thank Lorne, go say hi to Lorne, you know, make sure you stop by, or maybe not the cast, but sometimes the other producers are like, you should go say hi to Lorne. And I'd walk up to his table and be like, hi. And he's like, hello. And I'm like, how are you doing? Are you having a good time? I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm really happy to be here. I like your tie. Okay. I'll talk to you later. Okay. Goodbye.
But so the real reason why you didn't necessarily kiss ass is that, you know,
I wasn't good at it. And also, like Bill Hader said, you know, the fact that you're going to go do this movie and he's letting you off to go do this movie or whatever.
Which movie?
It was Backup Plan. Uh-huh. And he said, you should thank Lorne because, you know, I one time didn't, and I could tell, I don't know, maybe it bothered him. I don't know.
God.
He didn't know, you know, but he was just like, maybe you want to, you know. And I just was walking down the hall, and you sometimes see him coming.
Yeah.
And every part of me is like, go the other way, just turn on your heels, go run, move. But I was like, no, I'm gonna take Bill's advice. I'm gonna go thank him, you know. And by the way, Bill was incredibly sweet. I mean, he didn't have
great
to. People don't usually give advice there. It was really nice of him too. So I know it was coming from a nice place, but I went over to Lorne, and it was without any, like, you know, warming into a conversation. I was like, hi, Lorne. I just want to say thank you so much for letting me do this movie. I am really excited to go do this. And you're just very nice. And also, do you have a lot of shirts like that? I like that one. It's very nice on your body. Okay. And he just kind of looked at me and he went, okay. Like, just okay. And I was like, this guy hates me. And he never, I never had that one-on-one where I sit down in his office and he gets to know me as me. So it's just, I could never, I always misfired every time I talked to the guy.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Michaela Watkins, episode 642. And that's available for free on all podcast apps and platforms. You can get every WTF episode ad-free with a WTF Plus subscription. Click on the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. Tonight, I'm in Dallas, Texas at the Majestic Theater. Tomorrow, Friday, I'm in San Antonio at the Tobin Center for the Performing Arts for two shows. And on Saturday, I'm in Houston at the Cullen Theater at Wortham Center. Then I'm in Long Beach, California at the Carpenter Performing Arts Center on Saturday, November 12th. Eugene, Oregon at the Holt Center for the Performing Arts on Friday, November 18th. And Bend, Oregon at the Tower Theater on Saturday, November 19th. In December, I'm in Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel for two shows on Friday, December 2nd. And then Nashville, Tennessee, I'm at the James K. Polk Center on Saturday, December 3rd. And my HBO special taping is at Town Hall in New York City on Thursday, December 8th. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all dates and ticket info. Okay, now here's some guitar that I did at some point.